You're listening to the Sunday Session Podcast with Francesca Rutkin from Newstalk ZB.
Right, Australian Lisa Blair is a solo adventurer. She is a multi-world record holder and dead set sailing and adventure legend. In 2022, Lisa became the fastest person to sail around Antarctica solo, non-stop and unassisted, something only achieved by two other sailors. Now, Lisa's first attempt at that feat has been turned into a documentary. It's called Ice Maiden.
Everything was like mounting up. And after 5 days of just extreme sleep deprivation, I just felt like I couldn't keep going. I felt like the world was telling me not to go, and I started listening to those doubters, and I started listening to the naysayers that were saying, don't go, you can't do it. I'm so close to home. I have to step up. I have to figure out a way. I have to make it work.
It is quite a tale. Lisa is here in New Zealand, and of course, she arrived on her own by boat and literally in world record time. Lisa Blair, thank you so much for coming in. Ice Maiden the doco. It's not a great advertisement for solo yacht racing. What? It's an incredible documentary, but it is quite a journey you go on. Why do you love it? Why do you love the solo adventure racing?
Well, I guess firstly, I didn't quite know what I was signing up for on the first project, and I didn't quite know how close I was going to come to maybe not coming home from that trip. But I guess like for me, it's that question of like, what are you capable of if you really try? And I think there's a big difference between like perceived risk and actual risk. And something like sailing solo around Antarctica seems super risky. And when you watch the film, you will see it was super risky in some elements. But, you know, at the same state, if you've got the right skills and experience to back up those conditions and the right type of boat for the project, then you really can kind of go and achieve anything you want.
Explain to us what those seas are like down in the Southern Ocean.
Yes.
If so, you can, try and put them into words.
Yeah, so it's on a rough kind of scale, it's basically sailing through a cyclone or a hurricane every week. So from a small boat's perspective, I'm on a 15-metre boat and the waves will be roughly the size of my boat high. And you're looking up into skyscrapers of waves. So the average swell was about a 3-storey building down there. The worst conditions I saw was about a 5-storey building as a wave coming down and smashing into the boat. And you know, 1 square meter of white water is 1 ton of pressure applied to the boat. So if you've got a 15-meter breaking wave, that's probably got 3 or 4 meters of white water. So that's like tons and tons of pressure on that impact.
And then what's the difference between a very large wave, but then the wave actually breaking?
Yes, yeah, so a large wave, yeah. No problems, yep. At all. The boat will go up and over it. It's like this magical thing. There were so many times where I'd look out and go, yeah, no, there's no way we're getting over that wave. No way, no way. And then the boat would just amazingly, like she's just an incredible vessel. She'd just go up and over these skyscrapers. But if it's breaking, then you've got that power behind it, that punching hit, and it'll throw you from the peak of the wave where it breaks. It'll impact the hull and then basically you free fall to the trough of the wave. So it'll throw the boat about 50 meters sideways, and my boat weighs 10 tons. So the force and the G-forces involved are really, really extreme. And then you've got the wind as well. So quite often in the middle of those storms, the wind would be so powerful that I wouldn't be able to breathe facing into the wind, and I'd have to turn my head and cup my mouth and create like an air pocket around my mouth so that I could breathe on deck, because the wind's so strong, it's just tearing all the surface of the ocean up, and there's so much moisture in the air, you're basically drowning on the deck of the boat.
This is sounding like a blast.
Yeah, come sailing with me.
Yeah, no, it sounds interesting. How often did you see land on this circumnavigation of Antarctica?
Only around Cape Horn, and then after the dismasting when I made that detour to South Africa. So you don't encounter land, and I purposely sail away from land and keep an exclusion zone past islands, because land is a hazard. It's reefs, rocks, islands, and you know, things that you can hit and they go bump in the night.
How often do you sleep?
Well, that's quite a good question. So you've still got to keep abiding by the law, which is Rule 5 of the collision regulations, keeping a good lookout. So I actually sleep in 20-minute micro sleeps. So for something like Antarctica, it's 20 minutes when I'm close to known hazards, shipping lanes, fishing grounds, anything like that, cruise line destinations, anything like that. But then when I was in Antarctica, there was literally nobody near me that I might hit. So the risk reduced enough for me to get about a 40-minute sleep. And I think two or three times as I sailed around Antarctica, I had like an hour and a half sleep. And that was like the gold mine.
Okay. This is just crazy.
Yeah.
So as we learn in this documentary, this particular attempt to circumnavigate was done in two goes because yes. There was something quite catastrophic that happened. And I don't think that I am overplaying that when I say catastrophic. How do you deal with a situation whereby you suddenly realize there is no land in sight, there is no one in sight, yeah. The waves are five stories high, and I've lost my mast and my boat has a hole in it and it's sinking. Where do you start mentally, emotionally, dealing with a situation?
I think
like
initially
that?
For me it was very reactive. So I was in panic stations, my whole body went into the fight or flight response. So I was adrenaline fueled. I was shaking like a leaf. I was in absolute terror of the fact that, you know, I'm probably not going to survive the night. And then it went through to like logic and leaning back on that preparation and planning aspect. And so for me, I had planned for all these catastrophic events to maybe take place. And then I tried to put kind of control measures, techniques, set the boat up certain ways or taking spares of certain things to like allow me to combat those. And one of those scenarios was a dismasting. It wasn't obviously a dismasting in 5 meter, an 8 meter sea, should I say, and 35, 45 knots of wind in those storm conditions. It was just a dismasting. So the severity of what I experienced versus what I had planned to experience was quite different. And the reality of it was very, very different because it's so isolated. Like the closest boat to me at the time was 600 nautical miles away. That's 3 days minimum for them to motor south to get me. So rescue just never was an option for me. So then it was around that mindset of understanding that and going, okay, the only way to survive is to keep the boat floating at all costs and to push yourself in those scenarios to make that happen.
Does that knock your confidence?
Oh, absolutely. Like I had no idea how a traumatic event like that would affect me afterwards. Mm. And I also didn't really know how it would take so much from me, like my connection to the ocean, my connection to the boat. You'll hear me, and I think I say this a lot in the documentary as well, where I say we all the time, and it's me and the boat. Like we're a team, and that boat has its own character, its own, you know, I'll get super stroppy at it and shout at it, and then I'll have to pat it and apologize. And I don't think you can go through an experience like that and not have it change your relationship with those things. And, you know, it took a lot from me, but over the years I've managed to gain that back and more.
Does it change you too? I mean, a journey like this in total, does it, you know, did you return back to Australia a different person?
Absolutely. I think anyone who crosses any ocean or goes to sea for any length of time will always come back different. I don't think you can go into something like the Southern Ocean solo for 3 months and not expect to come back a totally different person.
Do you go a little bit loopy? I mean, you're thinking about it. I mean, all we've got is the horizon, large waves and yourself and no one, nothing else around you. I mean, obviously you're very good at being alone. I noticed your mother in the documentary said you were a little bit of a loner when you were younger and things. But do you, obviously you talk to your boat a lot, but.
I did. And like if I did like a radio interview or something from sea, I was like ecstatically excited for days. Like I would ride that high for days, particularly if it was more than one interviewer on the panel. It was like, oh my God, I'd had a real conversation. This was so exciting. But at the same state, it was something that like I worked for about 3.5 years to reach the start line. So the isolation and the loneliness I'd been planning for, thinking of, dreaming of for that 3.5 years. And until I left for that first record, I'd only sailed 12 days solo at sea. So there's a massive difference between 12 days and 3 months as far as loneliness, mindset, how your mind copes. And also, like, it wasn't like 3 months of normal tropical lovely sailing. It was 3 months of every day was a new survival challenge and just fighting to keep the boat going through those conditions. And so I don't think I really had a lot of spare time to get loopy, but there were definitely days where I was maybe a little flatter than others, and Mum would actually send me everyone's like social media comments in an email, and she'd copy and paste them all down and send them through, and it would just remind me that I'm not alone even though I'm the only one on the boat.
Some people feel that when it comes to adventurers and adventuring, there's kind of nothing left to do, but you seem to be very good at finding new things to do.
Lots of things to do.
Since that first attempt, you've gone back and you've done it again, and you are now the fastest person to ever circumnavigate Antarctica.
Yes.
Which is incredible. What else have you done since then?
Well, only about 3 weeks ago, I sailed into Auckland Harbour, becoming the fastest person and the first woman in the world to sail Sydney to Auckland in a speed record. So I completed that trip. I hold 2 records around Australia, circumnavigating Australia nonstop, solo and unassisted. There's a whole bunch of things.
So how quickly did you, how much time did you knock off that record from Sydney to Auckland that you've just done?
Yeah, so the original record was 12 days and 14 hours, and I set a new record time of 8 days and 3 hours and 19 minutes or something, knocking, 4 and a half days off the record, which is pretty
fun. You hardly had time to even settle in.
Nope.
That's crazy, because how long did your successful Antarctica circumnavigation was 92 days by memory,
92 days, yeah. So very, very different.
Something 20 hours and 3 seconds. I mean, you count it down to the seconds, don't you? I love it.
Of course.
And so while you're here, you're going to head off on another adventure, because why not?
Because why not? And it was literally that mindset of like, hey, the boat's in New Zealand. Why not? Let's go sail around New Zealand. I've got the Australia records. Why not do the New Zealand ones? And then I learned that no one's ever done it before. So no one's ever established a world record circumnavigating New Zealand nonstop solo.
Is there a reason why?
I don't know if it's necessarily a reason, particularly as just someone hasn't thought of it. And there's a lot of yacht racing and a lot of shorthanded yacht racing out of New Zealand, which does like around North Island, around New Zealand, but they do it in sections and legs. And I think most people, if they're going to go off, and unless it's a specific record, they want to stop and visit the places and, you know, go to the fjords and cruise. And I think like for me, definitely will be coming back with the boat to do that at a later date. But right now it's definitely all around driving communication. And
so we're going to be able to follow you on your website. You've got a tracker. Are you going clockwise or anti-clockwise?
Anti-clockwise. Okay. So go north first from Auckland. And that puts me going around Stewart Island at the very bottom tip with the following seas and the following conditions. And, you know, that's very similar conditions to what Antarctica would have been. And we're going into winter, so cold temperatures. And I want to make sure I'm going with the conditions for those.
So how can people follow you?
So, you can visit the website or any of my social media channels, which is all Lisa Blair Sails the World. You can follow me there.
Your boat's called Climate Action Now.
Yes.
And this has been driven by your experience of being at sea and the state of our oceans. What have you seen?
I think the biggest like impact for me was racing around the world with crew in something called the Clipper Around the World Yacht Race. And we've got 16 people on the boat, and I was hand steering the boat in the Southern Ocean. And I just sort of, we crested this wave and there was this styrofoam box floating past. We were closer to Antarctica than any other continent. We'd been at sea for over 20 days, hadn't seen another ship or human for most of that time. And I'm seeing trash out there. And it was just like this slap in the face of, actually, what are we doing to our oceans? And until that point, I'd very much had the attitude of, oh, it's just one plastic bag, it's just one coffee cup. Like, my bit doesn't matter, I'm just one person. And sort of like giving myself or allowing myself that excuse. And until I started really seeing that, and there were other areas we sailed through where we had to put a crew member on the bow of the boat with a boat hook to physically push the trash out of the way of the boat so we could sail through, because it was so clogged with rubbish and debris on the surface of the ocean. And I was just like, you know what? I think I can create a platform that will inspire people to take on climate action now. And the campaign's all around small actions and inspiring that switch in the mindset of, instead of going, well, my bit doesn't matter, and showing people that every action matters, every step towards a better, healthier ocean, healthier planet, it matters. And collectively, we all have the power to create change.
Lisa, best of luck traveling around New Zealand. We should be following you.
Thanks so much. Can't wait to check in later.
Ice Maiden will be showing as part of the upcoming Dock Edge Festival in Christchurch, Wellington, Auckland, and also nationwide via the virtual cinema. Tickets are on sale this Thursday, the 9th of May. So for more information, head to dockedge.nz. Honestly, the film, even though you know the outcome, even though we've just had Lisa here in the studio, watching the film really does have you on the edge of your seat. My producer, Kerry, was just listening to that interview going, this just sounds like my worst nightmare.
For more from the Sunday Session with Francesca Rudkin, listen live to News Talk ZB from 9 a.m. Sunday or follow the podcast on iHeartRadio.